Welcome to episode 43 of Island CT Podcast,
a podcast about science, nature, technology, and education.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick. And together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
Okay, administration stuff before we start. So
yeah, we're back.
It's March 30th,
2017. It's been a long time since we've put one out.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. And I actually have, I think, three or four that need to be put on. So we're not going to talk about what happened, but basically Island CT is a website. Mm-hmm. Mostly shut down for quite a few months.
For about six months
mm-hmm. For personal reasons, which you can go on the website and see. There's a small note. But we managed to get the ERDF part of the website going because we had to for the kids,
right.
The school kids.
So we've been smoking for them as much as we can, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think it was a heroic.
It was. And so for the last, in the fall, we had four ARDF events.
So I think sort of. We had kind of four. We had three where people showed up. Our first one was during Hurricane Matthew.
Right.
And we had an event.
Yeah, we did.
And then we had one person call at the last moment. Are you still on? And we're already out there.
Yeah. And I don't use my phone some people have their phone connected to their hand.
Well, no, I think it was email they used.
Right. But even with email, I don't check email on the phone like most people do. So
you remember we're huddled in the front of the school underneath and the rain was coming in sideways.
Yeah.
And we were listening and waiting for people to show up, figuring, we're probably no one, but, and I'm checking. And then one of them is off the air. And I'm what's the deal, right? And we look over and we had set some up close to the school and you could see it in the distance.
Yeah.
And one of the trees was swinging back and forth and it had been yanked up by the antenna and the transmitter was swinging in midair by the vertical. The radials had been ripped off. It's I think it's sometime soon after that we decided.
Yeah, it's okay to take them down.
From now on, if it's rains heavily, we'll reschedule.
Right. And also, I remember looking out because we're in a covered area.
Yeah.
And looking out, and we're looking out in a parking lot, so it's nothing fancy to look at. But it reminded me of being on Bear Island because it always storms on Bear Island.
And we also was in a small area, the rain coming.
So we're totally dry, but the rain's coming all around.
So actually, I can check.
To see how many events.
Calendar.
That's nice.
Right. So we had planned on three.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was the Hurricane Matthew, so that was not a real event. And then we had our other two, and then we got so many people interested that we planned an extra.
Right.
And it was very difficult to get the season going.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were already late.
Right.
And then it was December 10th when we finally had our last event.
Whew, it was a long season.
Yeah.
But the last one I served hot chocolate at because it got really cold.
Yeah.
I was like, we need to give these guys courage. And so that what we've done with it has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We have about five, maybe six kids that have been coming often.
Oh, I think more than that.
Is it more than that? I was trying to underestimate.
I got it. So, Toby, Lucy, I'm looking at pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Victor, I think he's coming back. That's three. Skip. Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
Gabby, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
So, that brings us to five.
And that mother and daughter.
I can't remember his name. Six. Yep, Stella. That's seven.
Yeah, Stella.
Evan. Andrew may not come back. And Charlie.
Charlie, yeah. He was very interesting.
Yeah. and possibly Henry. I mean, he showed up once for the last one. He seemed pretty psyched, but 10.
10.
That's not including parents.
Yeah.
So, and that's not including the ones that may or may not come back, and we weren't sure how excited they were.
Right. So these events are very family friendly.
Yeah, definitely.
So when I say the number of kids being so low, we still end up with about 20 participants. It's usually one-on-one with parents.
I think at each, we have altogether maybe 20-some people coming back regularly. I think at one event, we tend to only have 10 people.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, yeah, well, at the last few, it was more.
Was it more than
larger.
That?
But anyway, it's like, you know, 10 to 20.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun to see parents go out with their child, and it gives them 2 hours in the woods.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out where these transmitters are. And, they come back and tell you how they, you know, what were problems and what went well.
Yeah.
And it's just been very nice to see.
Yep.
Very nice celebration. Yep.
And when I was visiting Carborough High School to drop off some flyers, I met a kid. He's matriculating for starting at Carborough High School next year, and he already has his amateur radio license.
I know,
and
it's amazing.
Like, this is awesome. So that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So that's really nice.
Yeah.
So it's been very busy. Much more busier for Pat than for me, because he's been building and setting up and figuring out things, and he's been working with Charles, and maybe you should talk about your work with Charles.
Charles and Nadia have come to the events to help us out.
Very sweet.
So that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to mention also Dale Heidesek from Phillips Middle School has been awesome, showing up at almost every event.
He's been a hero.
Yeah.
And we've been just like, wow, thank you, Dale. You know.
We absolutely have to get a picture of him.
We do.
Because every time, you know.
I don't have one picture
on
of
kids,
him in the course. And my goal during the course is to take pictures of every participant.
Yeah.
But I'm so focused on the kids. And I know Dale would be too, being a teacher.
Right.
So I ignore Dale and I talk to him. He goes out, talk to him at the end, and then I forget to get a picture. And we should mention Nadia. Nadia has a really
Nadia
neat history,
and Charles,
too.
She was a competitor, both in Russia and United States, I think in Russia and in United States.
Yeah, placed in world.
And placed in the world championships. Mm-hmm. And so they've been coming to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you were mentioning earlier is Charles and a guy from, I think, Arizona, Jerry Boyd, have started this group where they're making an open source ARDF receiver that's dual band, but these guys really know what they're doing. Like, we have a website up. I'm trying to do this open source thing, right? But it's really, the target audience is real amateurs that really aren't, this is not their main thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an engineer, never had an engineering course or anything like that. And I'm finding out that I made some really serious mistakes in the transmitters. Now they work, but it's definitely not ideal.
Right.
And these guys are putting together a really complicated system that is really high quality.
And supposedly, like hopefully at the end, they keep on adding more to it, but it's supposed to be low cost, which we are very excited about.
Oh, yeah,
You know? So we're hoping to have some low cost receivers that the students can use, and we would start purchasing through them as a known source.
Yep.
So we're very excited about that.
Yeah. And there's some local people that have shown interest.
Mm-hmm.
So Joseph Huberman, who's the president of our local orienteering club, did, and he's probably the biggest proponent of ARDF in this area.
Mm-hmm. With his wife, Ruth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they compete internationally every year. They compete at the world championships every other year, which is every world championship, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
He went to give a talk at an amateur radio club. I think it was JARS.
I think so. I was thinking JARS too.
and met someone there who got really interested in it, and they are hooked up to the that receiver project.
Right.
By the way, the other thing that's interesting is Charles and Jerry, as part of the receiver project, they're also putting together how to do a transmitter.
Oh, nice.
And that's seriously making me think I might hold back a bit. You know, I've had such problems getting the 2-meter transmitter going.
Yeah.
It's been put a bit, it's really slowed down.
Right.
And, well, there's another reason we'll talk about that, that it's slowed down, which is really awesome. But anyway, it's starting to make me think, maybe I'll hold back even more and see what they're doing and see, can I simplify what they're doing and put together a 2-meter transmitter from their dual band, super awesome, complicated 2-meter combined 80-meter, and basically use what they're doing. And
right.
So.
And, yeah. And Charles, we cannot figure out how he has so much time to just answer emails and to help us with problems like suddenly
I think
at the last meet, none of our receivers worked. And Pat like rips off, what was it that you ripped off? The little connector for the, your where you hook in your headset.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He ripped it off. Like, you know, he unsoldered it. And he was trying to see what the problem was.
Right, right. I unsoldered the jack. I opened up one of the receivers.
Yeah.
Unsoldered the jack because I'm, what the hell is happening? This thing is not that complicated. Maybe we'll have to change all of them. Oh, my gosh, that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Charles comes back with this email like,
oh, just... Oh.
Just
spray
buy.
Buy this stuff. I think it was the Deoxid D5.
Yeah.
Spray it on and you'll be good. And I'm like, no.
That's
that simple. And I looked around and I had some stuff for, that was, it's not the same. Although we did get the sacred Deoxid D5.
We bought it, so we're ready to go.
Yeah. But I had some contact cleaner for when batteries go kablooey and stuff. And I tried that and, yeah, I think that's, it wasn't just that, right? It was a combination of slightly lower quality jacks with lower quality plugs on the headphones. Because I also had a patch cable with a very high quality plug, and it worked in both. So we're talking about the R3500D Chinese receivers. And that cable worked in there. And the earphones that didn't work did work in our higher quality German receivers. So it's a combination of both the jack and the plug being slightly lower quality that they're still okay, but marginal. And then, of course, in December, it was very cold.
Oh, yeah.
And the humidity and everything. I don't know.
And
the
it was like every second receiver failed. On us.
Yeah. Well, even like now, like practically everyone was not, none of them were working.
Right. So we were like, oh, darn, we have to start all over with receivers.
Yeah.
And we're just starting to feel like we had enough for any setup because we just got 4 more that our job paid for.
Yes, come on. So this is really exciting.
Yeah.
We finally put in an order that is an order from Smith Middle School.
Right.
So we ordered them. They're going to pay for it with the money that we collected because it's all the money we collect is Smith Middle School, ERDF club. And I'm hoping there'll be other clubs established at some of the other schools when they get more so they can get their own equipment, which means those are officially owned by the school now and they'll be used in. So that's really awesome.
We're just very excited to have our club buying equipment.
Yeah, I know.
It's like a big milestone that we were aiming towards.
Yeah.
So we're doing all of this free. So the students, when they pay, their $5 fee to enter into the event, and their parents pay a $5 fee if they go out with a receiver. All of the money is going into a club fund, which is an ARDF Smith School, Smith Middle School Club Fund.
Yeah.
And then that fund money, when it builds up to a certain level, yeah. we're able to buy receivers.
Yeah.
And so we're
and this was the first time?
This was the very first time.
Yeah.
And so we're very excited that yeah. maybe by the end of the season, we'll have 8 receivers yeah. that are owned by the club.
That would be really awesome.
And it means that now if the kids go off to competitions, we have 4 receivers to send with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was our goal,
yeah,
is
yeah.
to be able to
Although
say,
Although that was
hey,
never an issue. I mean, if a kid decided, I want to go,
we would have given them ours.
Ours.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I mean, basically, there's costs to running this every event, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the way it works now is we pay all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the money goes to the school to be able to get receivers
mm-hmm.
and other equipment in the future.
Right.
And I think I'd like to keep it that way for a while until it's well established.
I think so too. And it's, you know, yeah. we didn't go into it thinking it was going to be a money venture.
No, we knew no, from the beginning that it was going to be a giant hole. I mean, the end of the month, I'm like, I've given myself an allowance, right? Because this would be so bad.
It would be. So what are the benefits? Why do we do this? It's pretty cool to see a parent go out with their child. And it's cool because we have half men, half women
yeah.
going out with their kids.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, you know, the male team or the female team, which is a riot to see. And
actually, I hadn't realized each, that. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. And each group is very different about their yeah. tactics.
Yeah.
Some are like, yeah, we're going to go do it. And others, very sweet, will set up a little picnic in between so
oh,
it doesn't
I love
become
that.
Stressful.
And you know,
both the, I love. You know, there's
you know
not
you go
one
to a
more
park,
than the
right?
other.
And yeah. people on the trails and stuff. So I'm helping, I think it was two kids, I can't remember. I was mm-hmm. with one kid, another joined up and stuff. And I see kind of in the distance over to the right, we're going for one of the transmitters, one of the foxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I will see over to the right and I see this, the mother and the daughter there, and they're sitting on a rock. And I'm like, uh-oh. It's like middle of nowhere, right? I mean, it's a small area. Nowhere is very close to trail. But so I go over and like, hi, guys. So how's it going? They're like, yeah, we found this and this. And we decided we're going to start to have our picnic there. They're sitting on this they're like a boulder, right? They're having their picnic. It's the middle of, I'm like, this is awesome.
I know. Right? And the mother reminds me so much of my niece Crystal
yeah.
that it just makes me laugh because, you know,
yeah.
she's just very happy-go-lucky
yeah.
and, you
yeah.
know, very, yeah. very sweet. Anyway. So.
And the father and the younger son showed mm-hmm. up on the last one, that younger guy, Gus. He's a little firecracker.
Yeah, it's not
back.
Like
it's
we
fun.
Didn't have one like that, so I
oh,
thought
yeah.
it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. It brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah. So I know what we're going to go on to is probably more of this, but I do want to say we are planning on going back to having science articles and stuff.
Oh, yes.
But this is our first time in so long,
yeah.
and we've done so much.
Yeah.
And usually we spend the last half hour to talk mm-hmm. about future plans and what we've
right.
done. I think it's going to be 90%.
It is.
What we've
and,
done.
And, yeah, you're totally right to mention that.
Yeah.
And seriously, the articles I looked at
yeah.
were just like, oh, this looks nice. It was like
actually, before
Kelly visits a candy store.
Before we go on to the next, like, maybe we'll treat the rest of this as what we're doing in the, with what we're, future plans,
okay.
because we have to talk about the big
yeah.
thing that's new, which
mm-hmm.
has been delayed a bit. But
mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk to about some of the stuff you've
okay.
read?
Okay, so like, I topics? Have a few articles, and this is the first podcast or one that we're doing
mm-hmm.
that we actually haven't talked about articles before, where, you know, we kind of simmer through them and, oh, I noticed that too. So just today, published in Science, and it was just in their news, or no, it was actually an article that's published in volume 3, number 3, and it is for this month, so it's the latest issue of Science.
Okay.
And it's talking about disposable sweat-based glucose monitors for diabetes. People with diabetes. And I thought, wow, how cool. And it's a really neat device too. I will try to pull it up so you can see it. But it's this neat little device that fits on your skin. There's one that goes on top and one that goes below. They're still testing for seeing how reliable it is.
Do you know if they're measuring really glucose or if they're measuring something else that acts as a parameter from which you can tell the glucose in the blood? Activity variation of glucose oxidase.
Yeah.
Oh, due to lactic acid secretion.
Right. So okay. It's looking at lactic acid. So they're looking at lactic acid.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't think you're going to find much glucose in sweat.
But. Right. But anyway, I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful breakthrough so people don't have to constantly do little blood samples.
Yeah.
Anything to make it easier. And so, anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing more about that.
Yeah.
And I really hope that it's a success for them. The other thing that I found and that hit the Science News this week on March 29th, it was the underground...
Yesterday.
Yeah. Huh. Underground lab in China. Are developing potent new opiates that are faster responding, and they're the ones that are coming in as heroin, and it's the new kind of heroin that's made.
So this is not for medical uses.
No,
this is
labs
and that are.
That are
making narcotics.
Narcotics that are sold in the streets. And what's really, it's just, you know, there's a lot of things that the article struck me with. And first, 85% of the world's synthetic and natural opiates are sold in the United States.
Right.
And that was a real shock to me. Yeah. That we're taking that much of the market of illegal drugs. And the other thing is this particular drug, fentanyl, or fentanyl, right here.
Fentanyl.
Crosses the blood-brain barrier with ease. And that's what makes it so fast-acting.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually... 100 times stronger, and sometimes it makes it even 10,000 times stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So in one particular area, it was actually in Ohio, they had 169 people die because of overdose. And it happened within a short period. So this drug hit the street, and then people started to die very quickly. And it took them a while to figure out what was going on, and it was because of the work being done by coroners that helped them realize that if this happens, they need to treat it with much stronger stimulants.
Right.
And so the stimulant dose was suddenly put up much higher for the EMS crew. In order to hopefully revive some of these people.
Gotcha.
So it was, I guess I was, you know, when a new drug hits the street, I didn't think of how the coroner and the EMS would have to work together to develop a protocol for addressing this new situation.
Yeah.
And it made total sense when I read it, but I'd never thought of it
Right.
You know, it never occurred to me because it's not within things that I normally deal with. Right. And so reading it, I was just like, wow, this is just crazy. And it was, you know, it's one of those things I think is good to know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the other thing that struck me, because I've been doing all of those indigenous peoples and people studying them for the first time, and they're finding new groups and they're studying them.
Yeah.
I thought this article is cool. It's a very short one. It's in the News in Science, and it was in the latest issue. So we just received our issue today, and so I'm not sure the date of the issue. I apologize for that, but it's like March issue. And it's an ethics code for studying the San people in Africa, Southern Africa. And what's really cool is they came up with the code to give to researchers about how they were to be addressed.
Cool.
And I thought it was, you know, it was a good wake-up call, I think, for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
When you're going in to learn about a people, we have to be careful with the vocabulary and the approach we take.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're truly learning about a person as an equal to them,
mm-hmm.
you address them in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they've been bothered by is terms like Bushman and things like that. It's like, you know,
which you wouldn't think from your point of view.
No. And yet you know, we all develop a culture, a language that goes with our culture.
Right.
And we have to be very mindful of when we're addressing others that we have not addressed before.
Right.
And I thought it was a really neat wake up call. And of course, I kept the picture in her notes because it just, you know, it made me think of the people.
Cool.
Anyway, I thought it was a nice wake-up call. And also, and you know, yes, you do have a PhD, and congratulations, but you're working with people, and you're going to have to work with people on the level that they choose.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's what I, you know, when I came away from that, was like, good for you, you know. Anyway, and maybe it will make other groups more mindful, like the Christians and the groups that are trying to move into those areas and evangelize, that they're thinking more about how the people want to be related to.
Although they have a different, I mean, they're there to help people, but also they have a whole
mission. Yeah. Yeah. So, I did think of that too. I was like, you know, the researchers aren't the only ones going in. It's like as a whole group, you know, the government, the whatever group it might be moving in to make that address. And the other thing is, because I've always been looking into fracking and, you know, keeping it on the back burner. I think we've talked about it once in one of our podcasts.
Yeah, it's come up because of, there's some studies done about what, you know, it's complicated.
It is. And I'm still trying to figure it out. And there's an article in News, a very short one, about fracking rules reversal. Mm-hmm. And the Trump administration plans to rescind the Obama-era rules that require public disclosure of chemicals and hydraulic fracturing on federal or Native American lands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, although they plan to rescind this, they say that this process will take like months or years in order to accomplish.
Right.
And also, when I was just in Washington, March 10th, the Native Americans were doing a whole protest.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a large group protesting, you know, the pipeline and that. And then, you know, this coming out about fracking on federal and Native American lands.
Mm-hmm.
That must be yet another blow. So, the other thing that has popped into my kind of article land in class is the three parent babies. There's this article, and
I think you remember.
And it was like a of a public article. It wasn't an article in Science.
Is that nuclear transplant stuff?
So, yeah, it's like looking at transplanting the mitochondria.
Oh, okay.
Because
yeah,
it's to address a disease where the woman lacks or doesn't pass on the mitochondria appropriately. And so they need the mitochondria donator. And
but,
so,
but they're not transplanting mitochondria. They're transplanting the nucleus into the cell with the mitochondria.
Right, right. Okay. That's right. I didn't say that.
I mean, you could in theory do it the other way, I suppose.
I think you have it right, not the way I was saying it.
Although, anyway. You know, it's interesting. I mean, just theoretically, if you were tackling this, right, you wouldn't want to do it the other way because most of the proteins in the mitochondria. Oh, wait a second. I'll take it back. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, sometimes when you have this great idea.
You have this insight.
You have this insight, and you open your mouth, start talking, and you realize, that doesn't make any sense. but no, actually, so here's the point. Have they got any results out of this?
So, actually, in September 2016, doctors working in Mexico.
Yeah.
They announced a patient that had given birth to a boy following the procedure.
Okay. So here's the interesting question, right? Mm-hmm. These are long-term problems they have, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the genes of your mitochondria, some of them are transcribed from inside the mitochondria, the mitochondrial genome, but most of the proteins are from nuclear DNA, are transcribed, and then transported to the mitochondria. So it seems to me like you better know which genes are defective, and if you've got bad mitochondria, actually, chances are, there's nothing wrong with the mitochondrial genome. There's something wrong. So you transplant nucleus to one with healthy mitochondria, it might not help.
Right.
It's interesting. I had never thought about it until just now when I just made that stupid.
This one doesn't actually go over the process. It goes over the regulation.
Right.
So they're planning to regulate it and license the technique. Mm-hmm. So it would be allowed to some women to avoid passing on the disease.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's just, as these techniques and procedures become more applicable in people's lives, then the regulation starts to come on of what will they, how is this going to be monitored? So they're my articles. So you can tell it's sort of a hodgepodge of things that I found in the last few days.
So I've been working late at night, every night, preparing for Art of. So I don't have very many articles, but did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Malaria, it came up,
I did not see
it. Last week or a couple weeks ago.
You should say the name of the article.
It's been all over the news, so one article was out of The Lancet, I have here February 15th, and one was out of Nature, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, March 6th, no, that's not right, I don't know the date. Anyway, it's been in the news, and it's about... I mean, it's not world-changing, it's just a big advance in technique where it looks like they've got a malaria vaccine that works.
Oh, wow.
It's not going to be... And the fact that they actually have one that works is actually not new. This has been known already. It's just hasn't been practical and is actually still not practical.
Okay.
So it seems like, well,
so it's not a manufactured vaccine that,
so here's the thing,
hundreds of thousands of people can have.
No. So here's the thing. We know that if someone gets gets bitten by a mosquito,
mm-hmm.
and the malarial parasite in the mosquito are defective some way. So perfect example is we irradiate the mosquitoes, right? Mm-hmm. But there's other ways of doing it. Then the person will become immune to malaria. Now, we're not sure for exactly how long, right? Mm-hmm. But getting people to be bitten by mosquitoes that just happen to have the malaria parasite irradiated the right amount and stuff, that's just not going to happen as a vaccine. They were able to get, I can't remember if it was proteins or whatever from, I think, no, they were injecting the schizonts, those malarial parasites that actually go to the liver first before they go mm-hmm. into the red blood cells. And they did it either with ones that they managed to, I don't know if they genetically engineered them to be defective, I can't remember, or to inject like live ones.
Mm-hmm.
But give you prophylaxis at the same time. And that really slows down the parasite. So you actually don't get sick from malaria. And both studies, showed that people were protected afterwards for quite a while. So, I don't know. It's like, it's a big advance. It's not something that can be applied, I don't think, to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But you can imagine people going into Africa. That's a scale like you could do, right?
Right.
So if, you know, Doctors Without Borders were going to go into a region, you might vaccinate everybody going in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can take care of getting their job done, helping people instead of also having to deal with malaria. So, and it's an advance in the field, so... And I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that is. So,
small steps. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a big step, actually.
It is. It's
considering
huge.
How long it's been that we've been looking for a malaria vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Two different groups showing it at the same time.
Neat.
Right. I've had some other readings I've done, but I just wanted to mention that one because
mm-hmm.
I haven't had time to look over the stuff. So,
next steps.
Should we talk about what's coming up next?
Yeah, okay. I think we should.
April 8th?
April 8th.
Is the next
we
Saturday
have
event.
Our spring event, our first spring.
First one of the spring.
Mm-hmm. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So at the same time, maybe we'll talk about the course timing system. And that's something else that's really delayed everything else. And now it looks like I just ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be used for the first event, maybe not even for the second. Basically, this is a little bit like the sports idents type system and other course timing systems where, you know, right now we have the students go out and they find one of the foxes and there's these little colored tags and they grab one and they come back. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep track of the time when they leave and come back. This way, they'd have a card. They put the card onto the timer. It records when they start. They go out. They find a fox. There's a little box. They put the card on there. And it's all done with RFID.
Mm-hmm.
And there's real-time clocks on everything. And it keeps track of their time. They come back. We can download it. That would be very cool.
I really hope that works. Yeah. That'll be so exciting. And it's been a huge undertaking that you have taken on.
After the last meet in December, I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm just going to relax a bit. Mm-hmm. And this has
Tinker.
Been a, yeah, mm-hmm. and this has been something we've been wanting to... So the issue is this. As the school could afford the sports ID system to get started, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like us, we could afford it to get started. Not the school's not going to give us money for this.
Mm-hmm.
We're not big enough yet, but we could, the school, like our plans for the school, but it'd be a one-time thing.
Right.
And each one of those little keys is $37, or mm-hmm. was, it's probably going up. Mm-hmm. And we're stuck with their software.
Right.
And we can't, and I mean, we've dealt
with
this
would be
okay.
Which is kind of funky.
It's just, it's a nightmare that you can't find your own solutions.
Right.
That just work. And of course, it's not open source, so there's no one out there that can come up with their own solutions. And this one, the cards are $2.50 each.
Yeah, that was very exciting.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, and the only, and so we started working on that in December, and I didn't think it was going to take off, you know. But suddenly, everything was working. Mm-hmm. It just, and so I started to put all my effort into that because I was making huge strides, and that's what put the 2 meter kind of on hold. Because I was working at that at the same time, and I just kept hitting barrier after barrier.
Right.
And I've made some progress on that, and I think we'll still use some, maybe at the last event, just one or two we'll borrow mm-hmm. instead of the ones we make. But the course timing systems, I'll try on Opera Life to put one out there, like our mm-hmm. homemade one. And I ordered some Oshpark boards, and it turned out that I'd made a mistake in some of the hole sizes, and just destroyed a board trying to make it work, and finally gave up.
Yeah.
So,
and
that'll be for another time.
Yeah, and seriously, that's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, that's part of the building process.
And now I'm back to just trying to get everything working. Mm-hmm. Just for the first event from last year, so I'm not even working on that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we're almost ready, though.
We are. So, very exciting.
Yep.
Yeah, we're almost there.
And I'm really psyched for the course timing system. I think that's going to be big, and I think other people will be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that could be applied to all sorts of stuff.
Definitely.
So, and it won't necessarily be any less expensive. Because we don't have mass market, right?
Right.
It won't be any less expensive than the stuff that's out there. But the fact that the key cards are mm-hmm. $250 instead of $37+, that's going to be huge, right? It'll be less expensive for the participants.
Yeah. And that's our goal. Yeah. We want more participants.
Well, also as a club, if you're established, it doesn't matter. But if you're starting something new,
yeah.
Then you can start and just buy the cards yourself for people
exactly.
to use, and like we're going to do. Well, the other way around, it's like, man, what a barrier that is.
Mm-hmm. So agreed. So very nice.
Yep.
So, anything else that you would like to mention?
There's a lot, but I think we've covered a lot already.
I think we have. We're very excited about our first event.
Yeah.
We really hope we have, you know, a crowd that's returning to us that we've seen before, just so we can say hello to faces we already know, and hopefully we'll see quite a few new ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
finish up?
Yep, finish up.
So, thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out our blog.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.